Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. But I imagine by now, most of you already know the name of this podcast. I think I have to come up with a new intro. It's the same one every week, and I'm getting a little bored with it, but I don't know. I mean, I probably won't change it. But thank you, as always, for everyone who subscribes, downloads, tells a friend. Remember, that's the way this podcast grows, is by you telling people that are into wine, that are intimidated, but want to learn a little bit about wine and don't want to be in some sort of really just, I don't know, douchey or just over the head or snobby or whatever category you want to think. And let me say, most people in wine are actually not like that. The problem is, it's the bad apples. And the bad ones, they really amplify it. And you're always going to remember those people more than the majority that are good, nice people that are legitimately, all they want is for you to learn about wine. And they want to teach about wine and pass some of their passion. It's kind of like anything else. I mean, everyone listening, you got your own passions and hobbies, and you like to share it with people, but your friends don't care because your friends are jerks. And you know, they don't care about the fact that you're into World War I history or, you know, that you're into studying birds from South America. But in this case, you know, at least this pod is, yeah, it's wine. It's, let's face it, it's a little more fun than birds. Anyway, I don't even know how I got there. But again, appreciate everyone who is listening. Today, we are going to Spain. We're going to Southeast Spain. The Penedès region, or Penedès, probably mispronounced that. Anyway, it's very near Priorat, Mediterranean, close to the Mediterranean. And the winemaker that we are talking to is Laurent Cuisini, and the winery is Pres Balta. And the wine we're drinking, it's a white, and it's a grape that you probably don't know a lot about. Xarello, I probably mispronounced that. It's spelled X-A-R-E-L and like hyphen L-O. Not a grape that probably a lot of people are familiar with, but it's a really good one. And Chardonnay is always going to be number one for me. And when I want to take for a break from Chardonnay, you know, usually Riesling is big. But after that, Spain has really become one of my favorite go-tos for white wines. And I've talked a lot about Verdejo. I've traveled there before, or just some of the whites you get in Rioja. But this one as well should definitely be on your radar. Xarello, the wine we're drinking, it's from their estate, obviously, 2017. And it's just herbs and citrus and grapefruit peel. And, you know, it's a nice round, a rounder body than you might imagine. Some sweet melon. And the note I wrote from ages ago, because I did this interview a little while ago, back in like early May, it's a blaze of acidity, but it's really lovely. Just a great wine, refreshing. If you're looking to get out of your comfort zone, give this a try. You know, in some ways, it reminds me a little bit of Verdejo, just with some of the nutty or herby notes that you get on it. And I just think, that, you know, it's around like these wines are usually $19 to $20. And I just think much better than some of the, and I always say this all the time, and I want to apologize to the really good Pinot Grigio producers out there in Italy. And there's plenty of them. It's just we don't get a lot of them here. So when people go to a restaurant and they just go, oh, give me the Pinot Grigio. Basically, what they're saying is, give me something inoffensive. Give me my alcohol delivery system with a little lime and spritz and lemon, and I'm good to go. Well, this wine is going to deliver more depth, more quality, more fruit, and it's just a really tasty wine. So give this one a shot. I want to give a shout out, much like the last podcast, this one, Noble Estates. They're the ones who hooked me up with the wine. They're the ones who hooked me up with the winemaker. So if you want to check out their portfolio, and you know this podcast, we are friends to the wine consignment company, NobleEstates.com. NobleEstates.com. It's a great portfolio over there, and I appreciate that I've been able to meet and talk to a bunch of cool winemakers and get to know a little bit about them. So that's it for me. I hope everyone is good and safe and healthy, and you're returning your empties in a timely fashion, and you're not just doing it where you've, You know, at the end of like the Grinch, when he stole all the presents from Whoville, and you know, the back of the sled with the dog, and the one dog, poor dog, and the sled is just filled with toys and presents. Well, in this case with Corona, yours is just filled with empty wine bottles. Shameful. Of course, that's fun, similar to what's going on in my household. Anyway, enough from me. Enjoy. This is Yoann Cuzzini.
The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And for this one, it's a Zoom meeting. Well, they all kind of are right now. And we are going to northeast, let's see, East Spain. I guess it's southeast Spain, from Perez Balta. It is Yoann Cuzzini. Yoann, thank you so much for doing this.
My pleasure. Matt, thank you for, a pleasure to speak with you.
Right back at you. By the way, I think I mispronounced your last name. Yoann, is it Cuzzini or how do I say your last name?
Cuzzini.
Okay. I'm very bad. I mangle names all the time. So a lot to talk about. We'll keep this easy just off the top. I was wondering if you could tell the listeners a little bit about the winery and about the history of it.
Yeah, with pleasure. So, as you said, Perez Balta, we are located in Spain, very close to Barcelona, mm-hmm. just in the very northeast of Spain. And we are a winery that we have been cultivating vineyards since 1790. So it's more than two centuries. And everything we produce, it's organic and biodynamic. That's part of our philosophy. My grandfather was very active. He wanted to produce wines in a natural way without any chemicals. And at Perez Balta, well, my father was also with the same philosophy, trying to produce healthy wines. In my brother and me, that we are running the company with the winery with our two ladies, we are just following a little bit these family values. Mm-hmm. Winemaking at Perez Balta is under two ladies. One is my wife, Elena, and the other is Marta. So Elena is married with me and Marta is married with my brother. And whenever we introduce them, both my brother and me, we promise that we didn't marry them because of being winemaker. when I get to know Maria Elena, that was 1997. And she is a chemical engineer. And Marta, she's pharmacist. And they helped us a couple of vintages, and they decided to go in 1999 and 2000, they decided to go back to university. And in 2003, they came back. And that was a big, big impact into the winery. Just within one single vintage, we multiply it by three, then the number of wines at Perez Balta.
It's such a cool story that you and your brother, it's your winery, and you both marry women that, you know, have a passion for this, and then they become the winemakers, and you guys run the more the business side. Do you ever get jealous of your wife that, and it's a hard job, but do you ever get jealous that she's the one making the wine and you're the one dealing with the business side?
No. We get on very, very well. They do all the, Marta and Elena, they do all the winemaking, all the technical part. And my brother and me, we are running all the rest. And we have a size that we still have to do. We are among the smaller wineries in the region. We are big among the small ones. And we are still have to do many, many things personal that we have to in a personal way to take care of.
You mentioned before about biodynamic and organic. I was wondering, for people who don't know, what is that beyond that you don't use chemicals? Mm-hmm. What are some of the other things that go into growing these grapes and making these wines to make it certified as biodynamic?
Okay, for biodynamic, the starting point, it's organic, and we are both organic certified by European authorities and also biodynamic by all our vineyards are biodynamic certified by Demeter. And like a starting point, it's organic. That means not using any chemicals in the vineyards. And biodynamic is one step further, looking to maximize life and biodiversity. It's not only not using chemicals in the vineyards, but to maximize biodiversity. And we take care of the vineyards. If I have the vineyard, I can show it.
Yeah.
You can see a little bit from here.
Oh, that looks gorgeous.
All the vineyards, all the vineyards, they have grass. They have cover crop. That's part of the biodynamics. We use some preparations that we prepare with. We make like tea of some medicinal plants. Could be nettle, dandelion, horsetail, some others. Some and are to give energy to the soil, to the plant, or to prevent the plant to fight against some fungus or mushrooms. No, we are also. With biodynamics, it's a must to have bigger animals going, having them in the vineyards. In our case, we have also the sheep that from November, after the harvest is over, till March, as soon as before we have the first leaves coming into the vineyards, the sheep go into the vineyards, they eat the grass and fertilize at the same time. Another thing with biodynamics as well, it's to take care the position of the moon and some other planets to do some activities or not to do, depending on that, no? And that's more or less the essence, and doing things with awareness and good vibes.
I wanted to go in a little more detail about, and you mentioned it at the end, the solar and lunar cycles. How does the solar and lunar cycles, how does that impact what you do in the vineyard?
Well, especially some of this knowledge, it comes from centuries and centuries ago. Already farmers have always looked to the sky, especially to the moon, in order to do some activities or not to do some activities. Like the moon has a lot of influence with everything related with water. And also depending if the moon, I don't know if to say it correctly in English, is getting like going to a full moon or going on or the other that the size is getting smaller. Mm-hmm. There are some activities or not to do when you and in historically farmers they were already looking to the sky to do some activities or not to do. Well, you can see the effect of the moon into the sea with the tides going up and down.
Yeah.
Sometimes and nowadays with technology, we forget about the planets, the solar planet, and we need sun. We need there are incredible interactions with different elements, you know, that we have to take care of, and we cannot forget.
Oh, okay. Can you hold on 1 second? 1 second. I'm just going to do one little thing here. I'm actually having wine being delivered right as we speak. Sorry for that interruption. The funny thing is I was getting wine dropped off at my place. Let this be a lesson to all people buying wine. If you can buy a case, please, it's great to do it. It means you don't have to go to the store as much, and we're all social distancing. And I'll give a shout out to Noble Estates, which is the wine consignment company that I got a hold of for this interview that we're doing now. And in fact, the wine I'm drinking from, again, Noble Estates, it's the one of your white wines, your Calcari. I was wondering if you could tell people a little bit about this.
Yeah, Calcari is one of the wines at Paris Balta that it's made of 100% Charello. Charello. It's a difficult name to pronounce.
Yes, it is.
Charello, apologizes for that. It's a Catalan word. This probably, if any of you here in Canada, you have drunk a bottle of cava, mm-hmm. especially cavas with more longer aging. But even in the younger cavas, there is always a small portion of Charello as a in the blend. And for cavas, for long aging, it's bigger and bigger, and there are some cavas that they are also almost close to 100% Charello. Charello is a white grape It has been a little bit not given value enough in the past, and now it's becoming like the flagship in our area, in the Penedès, that it's the area just 50 kilometers south of Barcelona. And Xarel·lo, it's a grape that it's not very floral, it's not very intense on the nose, the nose.
Yeah.
But it's a grape that the wines of Xarel·lo, usually they show nice minerality.
They do, this does.
And with a lot like fish, shellfish, oysters, for me, it's a pairing that I really love Xarel·lo because it has a little bit of like friendly salinity or friendly saltiness and friendly also bitterness as well that is characteristic of Xarel·lo. And it's a grape that has nice life as well. We are doing at Pares Baltas several wines 100% Xarel·lo.
Sorry to interrupt you, right? And like there's a bitterness, herb, grapefruit on the finish. You're right about the acidity. And I'm wondering, the Xarel·lo, I mean, that grape obviously gets overshadowed because they just think of it as a blend with cava. Could this grape do to Penedès, to your region, what we're seeing with Verdejo up in Rueda, where, you know, it seems like this grape could help define this region.
Absolutely. It's a grape that it's becoming like a flag in Xarel·lo. We participate also in a small, a tasting where there are around 50 wineries from the region producing, showcasing Xarel·lo, 100% Xarel·lo wines. And it's a great variety that we like a lot. And depending also on the winemaking, we are doing the Calcari. I forgot to mention the name. Calcari means calc soil in Catalan.
That's what I thought,
This specific vineyard, it's from where I'm now that I'm in the winery, it's a vineyard that is around 600-700 meters far from here. That specific vineyard, it's on a flat area. At Pares Baltas, we have vineyards that they go from, I would say, from almost 200 meters elevation and 10 kilometers far from the sea. We go to vineyards that they are almost 800 meters elevation. That's in feet, I think it's 2,400 feet, something like that, I believe. And in the upper part, it's very hilly. The temperature contrast, it's around 3-4 degrees cooler in the mountains than in the lower area. And it's a big diversity of soils, microclimates, and this is a little bit the richness of the region and why in our area we are able to produce nice whites, cavas, some rosés, and even very, very nice reds. A little bit this diversity of soils, climas, and grapes. Calcari, it's coming from a vineyard that during the Civil War in Spain, at the end of the Civil War, the vines were ripped off and it became an airfield that still now you can find 8 anti-bombing shelters in one is in our vineyard and in the neighborhood that they are still there, and they one has been like renewed and
really?
To show visitors, but a small the place where the airfield staff and some mechanics, if there is it was the enemy coming to bomb, they were jumping down, going down. A lot of history, a lot of history.
Yeah, I want to learn a little bit more about just of your history, but again, the Calcari, you can get this a case of 6. This from Noble Estates, and there's a nice depth on the finish. There's a little lemon meringue on the nose, but you're right, it's a very light nose. But this does like when I drank it, I did think a little bit of Verdejo, like a well-made Verdejo as well. Tell me a little bit more about the region, because people I think when they think Spain, you know, they know about Rioja, they might know about Ribera del Duero, but just a little bit about Pares Baltas and a little bit about the area in Penedès.
The area Penedès, it's a very ancient area in Spain for wines. In Spain, we have vineyards almost everywhere. We have more than 70 appellations right now. Penedès, together with Rioja, Sherry area, are the oldest regions in Spain. In the Penedès, the history of wine goes back to more than 2,000 years. Paris Balta, just in our property, in the vineyards we have in the upper part, they are in a natural park, and we have found ruins from the Iberians, the tribes and civilization that it was settled here before the Romans came.
Really?
And they were producing, yeah, it's you have to pay us a visit, Matthew, when you have the chance, and all this coronavirus is over, we need to receive you here, and that would be really great. So, I was mentioning you that we have in our vineyards a place where the Iberians were producing amphoras, baking amphoras, because it's a lot of clay, water, and there was wood to make fire, and they were making the amphoras in a kiln that they were filling it with wine, with oil, with honey, even with wheat. They were shipping it into the Mediterranean.
Yep.
And they were shipped to the with the Phoenicians, and that's around 2,000 years ago. So really a lot of history. And coming back a little bit about Penedès, Penedès is a region that Phylloxera around in the 1850, 1860, 1818, it made a big impact. At the beginning, when Phylloxera was damaging France, here the wine was a very very important, very very important business. Even many wineries there, they were located next to the train station to ship wine with train. And we had both white and red grapes. And when Phylloxera arrived, it happened that after Phylloxera, people had to start from scratch, planting vines again and bringing American plants, grafting them. And when that was happening, price of white grapes was higher than reds.
Really?
And at that period, it was like that. And it happened that in a short period, this area was like a red and some white wines. And after that, it became a lot of a white wine area because of Cava. Some Cava producers, they were paying more money for the grapes, and the farmers changed the red grapes into white. And in the 60s, 50s, 60s, 70s, little by little, the red grapes were coming back. And we have Tempranillo, we have Grenache. Cabernets and Merlots are also quite. They have adapted very, very, very well to our area, and it's an area that historically some of the bigger Cava producers are from Penedès, all of them. No, still wines. It's and wines like Calcari and some others are catching up, are increasing.
That must be exciting, just you're part of something to help add another element to Penedès to the wine region. What about your own background? Now, were you and your brother, did you think you were always going to go into wine because your grandfather and your father? Was there something else you wanted to do, or did it just feel natural from a young age that you were going to get into wine?
My life had a big impact of my grandfather, Joan Cousinet Gil. That was his name, and we have to thank him for the very, very hard work he did, and what all the properties that he bought that now we are enjoying. When I was a kid, me and my brother we were following him in the vineyards. He was visiting the vineyards on a daily basis, everywhere, so he knew exactly what was going on in any specific part of the vineyards. I was playing in the vineyards. When I was like 8 years old, I already was driving a small tractor in the vineyards. In those days, things were really relaxed. My life is in the vineyards. So for me, coming to work to the winery was like a natural thing. I when I was a student at school, later at university, I was spending all my free time in the winery helping, could be for harvest a lot, in the winery to label some wines, to even to do some deliveries in Barcelona, many, many different things. And for me, when I ended university, it was natural to come to the winery and do the best, put all my energy and knowledge and everything into the wine.
When was the shift at the Perez Volta from making grapes to be sold for co-ops to focusing mm-hmm. more on quality and making your own single vineyard, single varietal wines? I'd love to hear about that transformation.
That was a little bit, it started at the end of my father, my grandfather, mm-hmm. I would say on the late 70s. Paris Balta, we were producing Cava since 1934. At Paris Balta, our first Cava release was 1934. But those days was only Cava. It was on the late 70s when we started to release white wines. Later came red wines again, a lot with Grenache. And the big impact as well was when Marta and Maria Elena joined full-time the winery. That was between 2001 and 2003. And that was when really there was a big impact of their work into the winery, and when the quality recognition, the assortment of wines. We did a lot of vinifications per vineyard, per specific plots. And for me, the big change that happened and brought us a lot of recognition from the trade, from the press, from restaurants. We at Paris Balta, our main customers historically are the gastronomy and some fine wine shops. But we are not a massive producer that you can find our wines in supermarkets or in a massive distribution.
Yeah, I didn't know about you guys until my relationship started with Noble Estates and getting to try the Cacere, which is excellent. And you're right. I mean, with oysters or stuff like that, this goes perfectly. I was wondering if you could talk a little more about your wife and your brother's wife. You sort of mentioned they join. And that's a huge thing. And the amount of wine, you know, has gone way up. What were they doing? What was their impact?
Well, I believe that Marta and Leonard, they do a very good team together. The background, I don't know if I mentioned before, but Maria Elena, my wife, she was chemical engineer. She worked also for an American consulting company for a couple of years. And later, she studied winemaking and came to work with us after a little bit of travel. I think Marta, her background comes from pharmacy, and it's a similar story within one year that happened at later with Marta. It's in winemaking, like in many other things, there is no any real secret that or any specific formula or way of working that we cannot explain to anybody. It's a matter of taking care many small details in the whole process, like starting in the vineyards till the wine is in the bottle. When the wine is in the bottle, we are already safe and happy. But that's not happening. It's really a lot of details. And both Marta and Maria Elena, and I would say that ladies especially, they are specialists on taking care. They care more of small details that sometimes we do. And for me, I really think that this thing, taking care of lots of small details in the vineyard, starting in the vineyards, because quality starts in the vineyards, not starting in the winery. We need quality, healthy grapes to produce a good wine. And following the grapes flow, like from the vineyards, and taking care of all the possible details, and also every year learning from the past, learning from the different vintages, learning from advice as well, from when my grandfather was with us, he was a super good taster and was always giving nice and very useful advice. So it's a never-ending story of of learning and taking care a lot of details, and also your the will to improve, the will to improve yourself, to do what can we do better for next harvest. The only thing is that we only have harvest once a year. I wish we could have several a year so we can practice and test more things. And,
but you can't speed it up like that. You only get one shot per year.
Yes. Well, that's a good thing. We have to play with it, and we are happy. But we are really happy to have both Marta and Maria Elena. I have also to tell you that in the past, ladies there when they were not very well received in the wine industry, in the wine business. In Spain, in the old days, like I'm speaking of centuries ago, ladies were not in the wineries. They didn't want ladies, and especially during fermentations, there were some beliefs that they could have ruined the fermentation or stupid things from the past, mixing also religion and some beliefs. No, well, it has been proved that that's far from reality.
Yeah, I agree. I toured Rueda for 10 days last year, and my favorite wine was the one made all by women. So yeah, those stereotypes are ridiculous. You know, it's one thing I didn't even ask you about yet is how are you? How is your family doing with, you know, and just I'll start small. How are you guys doing with everything with coronavirus?
On a personal, thank you. By the way, thank you for asking. At Paris Balta, all the family, all the staff, everybody is fine. Nobody, we were lucky.
Good.
That nobody got the virus. The village where my mother comes from, that is only five kilometers from where we are, there was ancient people doing a trip together when this was starting and they were in trouble, that specific village. But nowadays, things are getting much better in a healthy way. I mean, now it's it's more than almost 50 days that this is going on. And the hospitals, they have free beds, available beds.
Good.
Intensive care as well. They are starting to close some of the pop-up hospitals that they created only for this. So it's getting better and better. But you start to speak with people, and some people, they have relatives or friends that some of them they got the virus, and especially coronavirus with old people like my parents. They have been at home since 15th of March. So it's really a long period. But now, it's a matter of few days, things are getting in a slow way, getting back to the normal, but in a slow way. And the authorities are very careful to do it in a slow way that we don't have a revamp of the infection. No?
Yeah, you sounded that I could give that exact same answer for Ontario and my 88-year-old father at home and doesn't understand when I go to drop off food. He's like, here, give me a hug. I'm like, I can't give you a hug, but here's some food. And including last time, I dropped off 6 bottles of wine, but I could drop off wine, but I can't give him a hug. What about on the Spanish wine industry? How much of an impact has coronavirus had there?
Business or the wine industry has been named as an essential and as an essential part of the economy. Mm-hmm. Like because it's related with food, wineries. We have not stopped working. It's a lot of work still bottling wines. With also in the vineyards now, it's really a lot of work in the vineyards doing green pruning, green harvest. So it's really a lot of work. But on sales, that's another story. I mean. Companies like us that our focus is gastronomy. The whole gastronomy has been shut down, all restaurants shut down. So smaller wineries focusing on gastronomy and the traditional old channel, it's we are facing very, very, very difficult situations, and we will in the following months as well. There are more bigger wineries where they focus more sales into large retailer supermarkets. For them, they are not suffering. Some of them, they have even increased sales. But so the situation is very, very different from depending. Smaller wineries are suffering much more than bigger ones, I would say.
That's funny you say that. A couple of weeks ago, I was interviewing a winemaker in Verona, and she was saying the same thing, that, you know, their wines aren't in the supermarkets. So, but the larger, you know, more mass produced wines were. So yeah, your story is very similar to not only Ontario, but also Italy as well. What's the difference? And maybe there isn't. Is there a difference between the wine scene in Barcelona versus up in Madrid?
No, I would say that the wine scene, it's very,
very similar.
I would say the same. I would say the same. Here, restaurants as well, it's different from US and Canada. They are not used to do takeaway or deliveries of their food. Mm-hmm. So in the past, almost none of them, only some like pizza places that they were delivering food or they're delivering pizzas, but regular restaurants, and this scene is changing, and more restaurants, there are now doing takeaway or delivering food home.
I just thought about this. You mentioned that you've been making wine, I think you said 1934?
1934, that was the first bottling of cava that we did at Paris Balta.
Yeah.
Two years later, it was the war coming, the civil war, and we had to stop. And in 1939, we started again.
See, that's what I wanted to get to, is we're talking about how coronavirus and the impact it's having on the wine industry. But I'm curious, and maybe, you know, the stories you heard from your grandfather, the Civil War or the Second World War, what impact did that have on you guys and the Spanish wine industry?
The Civil War here, well, it was devastating. I would say that people were killing each other. And there was a period as well that all businesses that they were like nationalized. So I think we cannot compare coronavirus with a real war of people killing each other.
Yeah.
On economy basis, I believe we are just now, it's 8th of May, and we have not seen the disaster. The economic disaster yet. Companies here by law, you cannot fire people right now. But this will be stopping in a few weeks. And if the demand, like it looks like, there will be no demand of many goods, then the problem will be really, really serious. But we have to wait. But the forecast is not very optimistic in the future. But we have to think that if we are not healthy, we will not be able to recover. So health must be a number one thing to take care.
Absolutely. And by the way, people listening, if you want to support Joan Balta and also Noble Estates Wine Consignment Company, again, you can buy a lot of their wines. Again, the estate, Paris Balta is the estate, and you can get the Calcari. I believe there's some reds as well, and you can get them at Noble Estates. So I'll leave you on with this question. You're talking about how every year, you know, you want to try to get better. Where would you like to see your wines, your winery, in say 10 years from now? What would be the best case scenario for you?
Our aim is to continue what we are doing and little by little getting like recognized by the trade, by the press as some best wineries in Spain or in the world, and this is an endless work of working hard in the vineyards, in the winery with the wines, also having nice partners like Noble Estates here in Ontario, that we are aligned, our strategies are aligned, and we have the same strategies of bringing the best wines to people that they can appreciate. I'm really happy that Noble Estates is bringing some of our wines into Ontario, that it's a place of the world that I visit usually once or twice a year. Yeah. I'm visiting Ontario since 2001, I believe. And well, really, you have wonderful country wines. I was first trip I did into Ontario was in 2001 or 2003, and I was with my wife, and I visited the Niagara Falls area. All the Niagara wine area. You have really a lot of nice gastronomy, nice and well, very nice people. So when Noble Estates asked me if I want to come and to do some winemakers event or winemakers dinner, it's a pleasure for me to come to Ontario.
Oh well, I gotta say, by the way, as I'm still drinking the Kakeri, I'm getting out just like a sort of a tangy orange, almost a little bit of candied orange peel on the finish. So there's more going on. I'll say about this wine, what I've said about some of the higher end Verdejos I've had. If you're tired of the mass produced Pinot Grigio that floods the Ontario market, getting a six pack of the Kakeri will do you well. It will age for a bunch of years. And I would highly recommend this. This is a joy. It's a lovely wine to drink. I can't wait to pair this with some food. I just wanted to again say, Lauren, really appreciate you doing the podcast. I wish you nothing but success and health and safety. And I'd love to see you sometime in Canada, or I'd love to come back to Spain. I've done Northern Spain. I haven't done the Southern part.
Thank you. Thank you. Great to speak with you, and also wishing Ontario and Canada all the best. Please take care of you, your friends, your family, and we will succeed, and we will recover from this. All the best, all the best wishes from Barcelona.
Cheers, cheers, my friend. Cheers.
Thank you. Cheers.
Cheers. Thanks everyone for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on Stitcher, iTunes, Spotify, wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.